Thank you very much. So, the courage of John Knox. Now, the natural starting point for this subject is the epitaph that Regent Morton pronounced at the burial of Knox. It's given in two different versions. In Calderwood's version, it runs, "Here lieth a man who, in his life, never feared the face of man, who hath been often threatened with pistol and dagger, but yet hath ended his days with peace and honour." And James Melville gives the words slightly differently, to the effect that he neither feared nor flattered any flesh. Either way, this was not a claim that Knox made for himself, although it seems sometimes to be thought of as such. But it expresses the view of an exact contemporary who had known and admired Knox over a long period of time. So allowing for hyperbole, what Morton was saying was that Knox possessed exceptional courage, a man who never feared the face of man, and so on. And this opinion was endorsed by Calderwood and by James Melville, who incorporated Morton's words into their accounts without adverse comment. So we could take this as the general reputation that Knox had among his contemporaries, that he was a man of exceptional courage. Knox's own view of himself showed a deeper spiritual understanding, as one might expect. He was more aware of his faults and his weaknesses. And on the one hand, he acknowledged that he was not unduly deterred from duty by the displeasure of others. After one of his interviews with Mary, certain Romanists looking on expressed their surprise that he was not afraid of her, to which he replied, "Why should the pleasing face of a gentlewoman affray me? I've looked in the faces of many angry men, and yet have not been afraid above measure." He was not saying that he could never be frightened, but simply that he had experienced the anger of others, who in themselves were more intimidating than Mary. So, he was accustomed to angry people being angry with him. But on the other hand, in speaking about his preaching in England, he freely confessed the undue influence that the fear of man had upon him. And he says, "The blind love that I did bear to this, my wicked carcass, was the chief cause that I was not fervent and faithful enough in that behalf," that is, in regard to preaching. "For I had no will to provoke the hatred of all men against me. And therefore so touched I the vices of men in the presence of the greatest, that they might see themselves to be offenders. I dare not say that I was the greatest flatterer, yet nevertheless I would not be seen to proclaim manifest war against the manifest wicked, whereof unfeignedly I ask my God mercy." So his own view of himself really was of that he was significantly under the fear of man, somewhat different from Regent Morton's epitaph. So we don't think that Knox would have claimed courage for himself, but nevertheless he did show a remarkable boldness on several occasions during his life, as could easily be demonstrated. And he seems to have had something of the temperament of the Apostle Peter, in terms of boldness, but just as Peter's courage failed at least once, and just as King David also sometimes fainted, so Knox may have done so as well. Now, David Lane, who edited the works of Knox in six volumes, and who was an admirer of Knox, says rather surprisingly that Knox cannot be said to have possessed the impetuous and heroic boldness of Luther when surrounded with danger. On more than one occasion, Knox displayed a timidity or shrinking from danger scarcely to have been expected of one who boasted his willingness to endure the utmost torture or suffer death in his master's cause. So that's David Lane, who, as we say, was an admirer of Knox, but he, in studying, not going through Knox's letters in great detail and other papers connected with his life, detected various occasions when Knox displayed a timidity. But unfortunately, he does not specify which occasions he had in mind. and to other writers have supplied that deficiency, but they have all been writers hostile to Knox, and I rather think they perhaps not picked out the occasions that Lane was thinking of. Three writers who've dwelt on Knox's supposed cowardice are the Roman Catholic 19th century historian of Bellersheim and Andrew Lang, who wrote a hostile biography of Knox around about 1900, and then Gordon Donaldson was mentioned in the first paper. Donaldson has the longest discussion of Knox's courage that we've seen, but it's not very helpful because my impression is that Donaldson was trying to find as much fault with Knox as possible. And this isn't generally a useful way of approaching historical subjects. And most of the charges of timidity against Knox, which Donaldson raised, were refuted a few years later by James Kirk. So what I want to do very briefly is to look at four incidents in Knox's life and to look at his reaction, four incidents of danger in Knox's life, and to think about his reaction to them from a Christian perspective. So we can't go through all the incidents of danger, but I just want to mention four of them. And to consider whether Knox was behaving timidly on these occasions. First one is when Knox wanted to accompany George Wishart to what turned out to be Wishart's trial and martyrdom. And Wishart forbade him, saying, "Nay, return to your bairns, and God bless you. One is sufficient for a sacrifice." So this is supposed to, Knox didn't go with Wishart, and this is supposed to be an example of Knox's timidity. Now, Knox had not yet preached, but he was already in danger of death because he was a Roman priest associating with so-called heresy. So he was in danger already. And in considering this and other cases of danger, there are two well-known scriptural principles to bear in mind. The first is the general principle of avoiding unnecessary danger in accordance with the sixth commandment, "Thou shalt not kill." As the Larger Catechism says, that this forbids the sin of neglecting the lawful and necessary means of preservation of life. We have a duty to preserve our lives in a lawful way. And the second principle is that is Christ's instruction to those engaged in the work of evangelism, that if they are persecuted in one city, they are to flee to another. And we have examples of both the Saviour and others withdrawing from danger and persecution and continuing the work of the gospel elsewhere in the scriptures. So both principles agree in this, that they require the believer or the evangelist to go away from danger to life or limb unless there is some overriding reason compelling him towards it. Do you flee unless there's a reason not to do that? "Thou shalt not kill, and when they persecute you in this city, flee to another." So they, as it were, if in doubt, unless one's certain that it's a duty, so that's the way I'm understanding it, then one would flee. And therefore, the real question is not so much why Knox went back from the danger, as why Wishart went towards it. And Knox went back, well, because his spiritual guide, Wishart, whom he recognised as being far in advance of him in spiritual wisdom, told him most emphatically to do so. So it wasn't timidity. In fact, his inclination was to accompany Wishart. But it was the following of divine guidance, which in this case was mediated to him through Wishart. What should he do? Well, George Wishart, who he recognized as having much more spiritual insight than he, was telling him most strongly not to go. So that was he obeyed what he saw, as it were, as the path of duty. Wishart, on the other hand, went forward to danger and to martyrdom because, like Patrick Hamilton before him and like the Apostle Paul going up to Jerusalem, he had a special sense that this was the divine will concerning him. The well-being of the kingdom of God in Scotland required an example of courage on his part, and the Spirit of God gave him a clear sense of duty in this direction. But Knox did not have that sense of duty, and Wishart could see that it was his duty was to preserve his life and prepare himself for possible future usefulness. We could compare him to the Apostle Paul escaping from Damascus very early on in his Christian life. So I don't think this incident is any reflection on Knox's courage, and as far as we know, there's no reason to think that Knox ever upbraided himself with not having accompanied Wishart to trial and martyrdom. Now the second case to look at, very similar in one way, but rather different in another, and this was when Knox fled abroad from England to the continent in January 1554 to avoid the Marian persecution. And again, we would say the question is not so much why Knox fled, as why others chose not to. Many Protestants in England were confronted with the same choice, and some, such as Cranmer, Latimer, Ridley, Hooper, Bradford, and so on, decided to remain, while many others, such as Knox and John Fox, fled. And one could study the motives in each individual case, and probably people have done so, but one certainly cannot lay a blanket charge of timidity and cowardice on all who fled, nor can one automatically condemn as rash all those who remained. One has to distinguish. And Knox, interestingly, was puzzled over his motivation. In a letter immediately afterwards from Dieppe to Mrs. Bowes, he says, "Some will ask, then why did I flee? Assuredly, I cannot tell. But of one thing I am sure, the fear of death was not the chief cause of my fleeing. But my fleeing is no matter. By God's grace, I may come to battle before all the conflict is ended. And albeit that I have, in the beginning of this battle, appeared to play the faint-hearted and feeble soldier, yet my prayer is that I may be restored to the battle again," and so on. There's an interesting chapter on this whole subject in Jasper Ridley's Life of John Knox. He comments that Knox was an alien in England, and therefore not liable to death, but rather to banishment. I'm not sure that he's correct in that, because Knox seems to have been in fear of death. But it does draw attention to a crucial point, which is that Knox was not English, and it was the English Protestant leaders who felt that it was their duty to remain and to set an example of refusing the Mass even to death. And most of them did that. They felt that the Protestant cause required them not to run away at that point. But Knox was not English, he didn't feel that same responsibility, and probably that's why he was puzzled. He wondered, why did he not feel the same sense of duty to remain that his friends felt? Well, and we would suggest it wasn't his duty. He was doing the right thing. Now, to go on to the third incident, which was when Knox returned to Scotland on the 2nd of May 1559 for what turned out to be the great struggle of the Scottish Reformation. So now I'm coming to Scotland this time, and the impression is that at this period of his life, he did have that spirit and determination, one might say, of a martyr, which he had not had, had not been given to him in 1554. 1554, he followed the injunction of going away from persecution, but when he came back to Scotland in 1559, he seems to have been determined that now he was not going to run away. In a letter the day after his arrival, he said to Mrs. Locke, said, "I am calm, I praise my God, even in the brunt of the battle, for my fellow preachers have a day appointed to answer before the Queen Regent, where I intend, if God impede not, also to be present, by life, by death, or else by both, to glorify his godly name. Assist me, sister, with your prayers, that now I shrink not when the battle approaches." So he immediately joined himself to Willock and Harlaw and others to appear before the Queen. In fact, that didn't happen, but and then soon afterwards he was equally determined to preach in St. Andrews, notwithstanding Archbishop Hamilton's threat that he would be saluted with a dozen of culverins, whereof the most part should light upon his nose. Knox was the heart of the Protestant cause throughout this critical period, as you can see from his sermons in Stirling and in November, after the congregation fled from Edinburgh, and again from his sermon in Cooper in January. So he was the one throughout the great difficulties and great pressure of that period to whom others looked, particularly when things went wrong. And so throughout that period, you can see Knox's, we would say, Christian courage. And the final, fourth and final incident I want to think about briefly is when Knox left Edinburgh in 1566 after the murder of David Rizzio. So Rizzio was murdered in Holyrood Palace. You can go and see the site of that. On the 9th of March, 1565-6, and the Queen was briefly held captive and escaped and left Edinburgh, and she returned to Edinburgh on the 18th of March with a large large army and very angry. And the people involved in the murder of Rizzio and their accomplices fled at 7 o'clock in the morning the previous day, the 17th of March, and Knox himself left Edinburgh at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the 17th of March and went down to Kyle in Ayrshire and then subsequently down to England, and he was away from his congregation until after the overthrow of Mary the following year. So was this timidity? Well, it certainly was not heroic, but his life was potentially in danger. So the Queen detested Knox, as became apparent. She even to the extent of sending a letter down to Ayrshire, ordering the unspecified nobleman with whom Knox was staying to turn him out of the house. So her dislike of Knox followed him all the way to Ayrshire. But his life being in danger, his conduct was prudent and I would think biblical, because the question is what was there some reason why he should have remained? He was someone intent on certainly imprisoning him, if not more than that. Was there some principle at stake? Was there some issue for which he needed to stand? What would the church have gained by his imprisonment at that time, and perhaps even worse than imprisonment? So these are four incidents in Knox's life, and there are quite a number of others that we could look at. Now Knox, in conclusion, Knox showed great courage on some occasions, and at other times exercised Christian prudence in withdrawing from danger. And he may, on other occasions, have been excessively timid, though we think not to the extent that some of his critics have tried to make out. By considering this subject, it comes to mind that many British historians of the last two centuries have lived very safe, easy, comfortable lives. Most of us. And this is often evident in their discussion of the dangers and persecutions endured by Christians like Knox, or like the English reformers fleeing the Marian persecution, or like the Covenanters during the 18th century. And you get what strikes you really is rather cold, callous discussions of the problems facing these people. Too often there is the flavour of the armchair critic, who has not even imagined what it is like to witness brutality against family or friends, or to be threatened with death or torture. One such historian that we have in mind here, Gordon Donaldson, made a revealing comment in connection with Knox's sufferings in the galley, which he thought may have been exaggerated, and he felt that these sufferings had introduced uncharitable thoughts into Knox's mind with regard to Romanism. And he makes the comment, no one, he commented, would look for a fair assessment of Hitler's regime from a man who suffered in a Nazi concentration camp. No one would look for a fair assessment of Hitler's regime from a man who suffered in a Nazi concentration camp. Which comment invites the question, who has a more realistic appreciation of the evils of Hitler's system? The man who's witnessed the horrors of a concentration camp, or the man, like Gordon Donaldson, who in fact was a conscientious objector, and who spent the Second World War guarding the National Archives on Loch Tayside? So who, Knox in the galleys, or some history professor, who's got the clearest idea of the evil involved in some of these systems. Now, there obviously is a danger of error on both sides, but the modern view has been very much that of the armchair, despising the struggles of those who are suffering. As the psalmist says in Psalm 123, our soul is exceedingly filled with the scorn of those that are at ease and with the contempt of the proud. Knox had a dangerous life by the standards of most of us, a very dangerous life by the standards of most of us, and he had more experience of his own courage and the lack of it than most of us have had. And we think we should not exaggerate his lack of fear. I don't think that's sort of what's led to these attacks on his claiming cowardice and so on. We shouldn't exaggerate his lack of fear, but we should recognise that though he had a naturally bold spirit, what was required was not his bold spirit, but what was required was Christian courage enabling him to overcome that fear.